and welcome to the Well and Well podcast. I'm your host, Susie Clark, and I am a corporate dropout who spent 6 years in banking and technology in sales roles in London. And I just got totally fed up with working long hours, horrible commutes, and sitting in the same desk chair every single day. I got so fed up with it that I quit my job and moved to Bali in Indonesia. And I'm now dedicated to helping others achieve this lifestyle through remote work opportunities. And I really just want to spread the awareness around this and inspire you to live life on your own terms. So this podcast is all about sharing stories from remote workers who are fortunate enough to have crafted a life for themselves where they can make money and travel the world at the same time. So if you're listening now and you're sick of your 9-to-5 and you're fed up of your commute and you want the freedom to travel, then this podcast is for you. There are so many incredible opportunities for you to live life on your own terms and earn a living. From freelancing to becoming a digital nomad to getting a remote job and traveling the world as well, these ways of living are all possible for you. And through my guest stories, you will learn what is possible and the tips on how to get there. We're all incredibly lucky to be living in a time where technology enables us to travel and earn a living at the same time. The traditional work contract of exchanging time for money and working in the office is no longer a good deal, with so many other incredible opportunities out there. To be well in life, you need to do some wild things. Hello, so this week I have a good friend of mine on, Amy McGill. She is an expert in marketing and she lives between Bali and Australia. She is originally from the East Coast in Australia and she started out in the corporate world in marketing roles. She worked her way up to become head of marketing at a large brand. And whilst learning loads and really picking up some amazing skills, after several years, she did start to feel a little bit restricted and unsure about whether the future career path in front of her was really what she wanted to do. So Amy decided to quit her job and travel for 4 months to basically figure it all out and what she wanted to do next. And it was in Sri Lanka when she was helping a hostel owner with his social media that Amy realized, oh my God, people really value my marketing knowledge. Maybe this could be something I could offer and charge for. So she got to work on a business plan and one thing led to another and she ended up starting her own marketing business, helping clients with social media, paid ads and branding strategy. And she now has multiple clients in multiple countries and splits her time between Canggu and Australia. And Amy's also got her own e-commerce store now as well, selling beautiful pieces, all interior pieces that are all handmade from rural villages in East Bali. And I can verify that they are like the most gorgeous pieces. She's got them all around her villa in Pararanan. And that's where Amy and I actually met because I stayed in her beautiful villa back in December. So you may have seen some of my Instagram stories. That is Amy's villa. And yes, she has the most beautiful like interiors and they're pieces that are all handmade in rural villages in East Bali, which I think is so cool. So the episode is super useful for anyone thinking about starting a business, anyone who is starting to feel unsure whether their corporate job is for them, maybe you're not really seeing the career progression or the path out in front of you that you really want. Amy chats all about how she started the business, including powering through during a really tough period of her life as her mum fell seriously ill. And it's an incredibly inspiring story. And I think if anyone out there is going for a tough time as well, listen to Amy's story because really it is so amazing that she kind of picked this fire within her to grow her business during a really, really tough time. So enjoy the episode. If you enjoy it, I would be very grateful if you could share it with one friend. I'd love to share these incredible guest stories with as many people as possible. So yeah, enjoy the episode. Welcome, Amy. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks, girl. Thanks for having me.
We're sitting here in Amy's beautiful villa in Canggu. Well, actually, Pararanan. And I met Amy because I stayed here back in December. And it's so nice to be back.
So good to have you back.
Yeah. So first off, could you introduce yourself to the listeners?
OK, Okay, so my name's Amy, and I have a marketing agency called Elaine Collective, and I also have a little e-com brand called Elaine Traders. So currently I am based between Canggu and Bali, and I started my business around 2 years ago.
Nice. And I'm really excited to kind of delve into your business and how you got there and what brought you to Bali and things like that. But first of all, we're going to start with your corporate job. So I know that after graduating, you started out in the travel industry in a corporate career. So let's chat a little bit about that. What were you doing and how did you find yourself there?
So I started my career as a travel consultant and then ended up working my way into the marketing side of things. I worked for a couple of different brands and then ended up getting into a global retail company as a marketing manager. So I was there for nearly 4 years and I managed a team of about four people. And then collectively, we were in charge of the entire brand. So we looked after all the advertising and marketing for the brand. And I mean, it was huge. Sometimes we worked with clients that had up to $2 million worth of ad spend. And so big sort of like TV ad campaigns and lots of fun things. Like I definitely loved it. And I really enjoyed managing people and working in travel. It was very exciting. But at the same time, it was also really stressful. And I probably worked around 60 hours a week most weeks. So after 4 years of it, I think I was ready to kind of try something else or just take a break, to be honest.
Yeah. And this was back in Australia.
Yeah, so back in Australia. It was such a good job. So it was one of those things I didn't really see myself leaving when I got it because it was just such a good one to get, and I really did enjoy it for a long time. I think it was a little bit confusing because you love what you do and you love who you work with, and then at the same time you're working these crazy hours and you're just stressed out of your head, and I was getting sick all the time, and it takes a while before you realize that's not healthy.
Yeah,
and it's something that you can't do forever. So I definitely don't regret it. I think it was like the best thing that ever happened to me, and I think if I didn't have that experience with a company so big, I probably wouldn't be able to get a lot of the clients I can get today.
Mm-hmm.
The skills I learned there, I've obviously taken on as well. And I definitely don't regret any of it. And I definitely don't look back and say that I hated the corporate world.
Yeah.
I really just hated the rigidness of it. Like, mm-hmm. I hated that, you know, you could work till midnight one night and then the next day you still had to rock up at 8:30 in the morning and be expected to be there on time every day, and the whole like 4 weeks annual leave a year that really messed with me.
Yeah, I think sometimes like the corporate world, some of the kind of culture, if you like, it can just be quite inefficient, some of the kind of not written down rules, but like unwritten rules.
Yeah.
Like coming back into the office at 8 if you've worked really late, like, are you really going to be productive within those first few hours? Is it not better like having a bit of line and then having much more quality time?
You know, like 8:30 on the dot, if you were there any later, it was just completely frowned upon. And, you know, extended lunch breaks were frowned upon. Working from home was frowned upon. It's just such a strange environment.
And yeah.
It's just not natural, I don't think. I think everybody works a lot more productively when you have a bit more flexibility and you can really have a bit more of a balance in your life.
Yeah, and when you feel like trusted as well, I guess, from
I mean, it was strange because I would do a lot of work after hours. I'd take my work home with me. I'd sit there and work till midnight, and I would get more done at home than when I was in the office, because in the office there was a lot of distractions and there was a lot of meetings, and it's just like, you know, you never really got anything done ever. So I think to me it was strange when, you know, even my managers could see that the work was getting done outside of hours, but they were still a bit strange with people working from home or even like I wanted to take my team places and work outside of the office, and everyone, it just wasn't a thing. It's like not a big thing yet. And I do think eventually that's where the big companies need to go down. Like there needs to be flexibility in the workplace, because it's just, it's just like a churn and burn environment. Otherwise, I don't know how people do it forever.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I think there's definitely a shift happening. And when I think about my time in corporate, we were all using like remote technologies like Slack and like G Suite and Google Hangouts and stuff. But then we're just all sat there next to each other. Yeah, like it's really strange. Odd. Yeah. But it's interesting, especially being here in Bali and seeing like so many people work remotely, and it's just become the norm here that like I can only see it changing and I can only see it.
I think so. I mean, there are big companies already kind of getting on board with the 4-day weeks or like having people, giving them the flexibility to work from home if they want to. And I mean, for me, like working remotely, I get so much more done than being stuck to one place. It's just, it's so much better.
Yeah.
The work you produce is better, and you're just generally a lot happier, and your work-life balance is so much better. And I was just talking to someone before about how I literally have not been sick since I started this. And when I worked in the corporate
world.
Me
neither, actually.
I used to be sick like all the time, like tonsillitis, really bad sinus, just all of this stuff that's brought on from so much stress. And even when you don't even think you're stressed, it was just the kind of the way the churn and burn kind of nature of it. And I'm probably got more work now, but I just, that stress isn't there. It's just a lot easier. You can balance it a lot better. And
yeah,
it's so much better for you.
Yeah, I totally agree. And there's definitely, I think there's studies that say when you're in a much happier state, your performance improves so much at work. So it just like makes sense,
it does,
to be honest.
Definitely.
Okay, so that's a really good insight into your kind of corporate career, your early stage career. What then happened in terms of you decided to quit? Like, talk me through that time.
So I guess it was just, I was coming on 4 years and I was turning 30. So I think that was a big thing. I was sort of at the point where it was one of those like, you know, is this what I want for the rest of my life? And there wasn't a lot of room to move, considering it was a big global company. I was looking and I couldn't see any job that I wanted there. And I couldn't keep doing what I was doing because it was affecting my health. I was very stressed and I knew that I needed to do something different. And so to start with, it wasn't even about getting another job. It was literally about having a break and just having a bit of a breather to work out what I wanted to do after that. And I sort of tossed the idea around for months, and then in the end I sort of figured, okay, I'm turning 30, fucking I'm gonna do it. And I had a conversation with my brand manager and he was devastated and basically didn't want me to go, which made it hard too. Like, I mean, I really did love the people that I worked with and I felt like they were family. So for me, that was the hardest part, was that I was gonna have to leave people. And I don't know, he sort of said to me, look, I understand that you want to go and you need a break, but please come back. Like, you can take a year, you can take however long you want, but please come. And it's so tempting because you kind of like, you know, it'd be great to just go and know that you have that security. But at the same time, I knew if I did that, it would always be holding me back. You can't really go and just go. You would know in the back of your mind that you have to come back. So I explained that and just sort of said, look, I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to feel. And just see what happens. So to start with, I'd planned not a huge trip, but I just wanted to get away for a few months. So I had a 4-month trip planned.
Nice.
And yeah, like ended up just going off on that. And I knew that it would be a game changer because it always is. Like, I'd already done this a few times in my career. I'd quit my jobs before and gone to travel. So it wasn't super strange for me to do, but then at the same time, this was such a good job. It was better than any job I'd ever had, so it was a harder decision, definitely. But and then so I basically just made the decision, packed up my life, went.
Where did you go?
So I started, my twin sister and I were turning 30, so we went to Mexico.
I didn't know you had a twin.
Yes,
so identical?
No.
Okay.
No. But yeah, we were turning 30, and so we met our big sister in Miami, and we then met our mum and dad in Mexico, and we did like a family holiday in Mexico, and then we went on, and I did a little bit of the Caribbean over there, and then I came back and started sort of a bit of a backpacking trip, and I went to the Philippines with my best friend. Oh, and then
amazing. Yeah, that is on my list.
Actually, we went to Sri Lanka first and then the Philippines, and then I ended up on my own for a bit and then got to Indo. So I had kind of always wanted to come back to Indo because I'd been coming to Bali every year, so I knew I'd end up there, but I wanted to explore more of not just Bali, like kind of get out and do more. But so I sort of had mapped out where I was going and things like that. And I didn't want it to be like a 12-month thing. I literally just wanted to have a few months, work it all out, and then decide, you know, where to go from there.
And did you, when you were away during that time, like, because you had set aside this time to kind of figure out what you wanted to do, did you do anything like proactive to kind of get those answers, or did you just like land in these places, just take yourself out of your corporate environment and just see what happened?
I mean, it's weird. It's like, it was almost instant for me in the way that it was like everything had finished up at home, and then almost as soon as I got on the plane, not so much for the first part of the trip because it was my family and stuff, but then when I got into like travel mode and I remember landing in Sri Lanka, and it was like you had nothing else in your mind. Like I didn't have any of that stuff going on with work, and you could literally just kind of be really open to what you wanted to do and what you wanted for your life in general. And I think, to be honest, I'd always had the idea of starting my own business. For years, I would come, every time I came to Bali, actually, I would come to Bali with my girlfriends every year, and we would have this great holiday. And for some reason, every time I came here, I would walk away with these same kind of plans, but then you'd get back to the corporate world and everything gets lost, and you don't have time to think or breathe. So it just, you know, it gets pushed aside every time. And then when on this trip, because I knew that I had all this time, I didn't set out initially to like start planning it or anything, but after the first week, it was there, like everything I could kind of think about. And I got to this town in Sri Lanka, it's called Hirakitiya, and it's such an amazing little community of expats. And that was kind of my first experience with the digital nomad kind of thing. Like I hadn't seen it before, and it was just full of them, and also just expats starting businesses, a lot of small businesses, and it just has a really great energy to it. And I was there for a week, and I was almost sold within like the first 24 hours. I was looking at these people like working from this amazing little cafe that we'd go to every day, and I started having a chat to the owner of the little guest house we were staying at, and I sat down with him one day to help him with his marketing plan, and he got so much out of the conversation that it just made me so happy to think that, you know, there were people out there like that that generally needed the help, and I've never really thought to kind of tap into that. I always was looking like big, go for the big companies, go for, you know, the corporate world where you get, I don't know, it's just the way that you're kind of, that's what I've always thought made you successful, I guess. So I started doing that, and then literally after that I was like, this is what I need to do. How can I make it work, and how can I make money off it? So I sort of started setting out a bit of a business plan. And that was like a weekend basically, but I kind of grew on it over the trip, throughout the trip. Started mapping it all out first, like just writing things down, and then I ended up kind of typing it all out one day and had a full business plan ready. By the time I got to Bali, I was like pretty much ready to give it a go.
That's amazing.
In the Philippines, I was also sort of doing a bit of work in exchange for accommodation, so that was a good kind of test run and for me to see if I did enjoy it, and also if people got value out of it, and like what types of things you could kind of charge. And so, yeah, like it all kind of started happening, but I was also running out of money. So it was one of those things where I really wanted it to happen, but I was thinking I'd have to come back home to sort of maybe get a job and then come and that sort of thing. So I wasn't like going crazy with it. But but then basically ended up in Indo, and I met up with a friend, and we really wanted to do something really different. So we went out to the Togian Islands, which is like a 3-day journey. It's insane, but so amazing. I definitely recommend everybody go, because it's just one of those like rare places in the world that nobody goes to. And
I need to go.
I really want to go back, because I mean, yes, it takes like 72 hours to get there, but once you're there, it's literally like the most amazing place. And you stay in like little overwater hut things.
Oh,
and
cute. Yeah. That's what I want to do that one.
And they
day.
Have like sea gypsy villages, and that's one of the only places in the world where there's a jellyfish lake where the jellyfish don't sting you.
Oh.
Yeah, it's incredible. So it was very amazing and something that I'll always remember. But we got out there and basically it was like very remote, like off the grid completely, which I used to love doing.
Yeah.
And it, you know, no Wi-Fi, no signal, nothing. Like even if you had a local SIM card, it didn't work. So it was kind of cool to start with. We were sort of there, but we'd only been there for about 4 days. And I remember saying to my friend, you know, anything could be happening in the world right now and we would have no idea, like absolutely no idea. And I was thinking more like natural disasters or a terrorist attack or something like that, which would be horrible, obviously, but still in my mind I was like, we'd have no idea. And then I literally like 10 minutes after I said that out loud, we got a knock on the door and it was one of the little people that worked there, and they said, oh, your brother's trying to get onto you. And I said, oh, I don't have a brother. I think it must be somebody else. So I didn't even think anything of it. Then they kept coming back and I realized, okay, it must be my sister. And I knew that something was wrong because she wouldn't do that. Otherwise, we're just not like that. So she wouldn't bother me unless it was something urgent. So I knew that it was urgent. So we basically had to work out how we could get onto them. And none of our phones worked or anything. So we had to borrow one local person's phone worked, but you had to take it out into the ocean.
Wow.
I don't know, because it works like in this one little spot.
Wow.
But then they said, you know, it's not going to work after the sun goes down. So you're going to have to hurry up and get out there and make the call and then whatever. So we chartered a little boat and took it out, and then literally the signal was so bad and we got through, but like all I could hear was my sister crying on the other, sobbing. And the only words I heard was, Mum has brain tumors.
Wow.
You need to get home as soon as you can. And that was it.
Yeah.
And then after that, I had 3 days before I was back in civilization to be able to actually find out what was happening.
Yeah, oh my God, Amy, that is just
intense. It's literally so weird. It's just like one of those weird things that happens in your life. And I look back now, I'm like, it was such a massive pivot, but like, it's almost so weird.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't been off the grid the entire 4 months.
Yeah.
Like it was literally, you know, I was only going for 5 days. I hadn't done that the whole time. And then it happened this time. I had like a really strange feeling the day I left. Like all of these things kind of just happened there. I was like, this is so strange.
Mm.
But then in the end, you know, we got off, we had to get off the island and make our way back. And once I got back to the mainland, we realized that in my mind, I was like, my mum's about to die, because it was just very like extreme, the call and stuff. But then when I got it, they were like, you know, it's under control. She had brain tumors. They found that she had advanced melanoma cancer, which is from the sun. So everybody should wear SPF 50 all the time. So she had advanced melanoma, like it was literally everywhere. She had tumors throughout her body, but the ones that were the biggest concern were the three in her head. So they needed to do major brain surgery and basically said, you know, get home as soon as you can, because you're going to want to see your mum before she goes in. So it just kind of changed my whole life, really. And everything that I thought was about to happen, and you know, everything changed. Like my life is just not the same anymore. And I flew back home. And then so for the next few months, we were just in crisis mode trying to get Mum through her surgery. And she made it. And then we basically had to start treatment straight away. So it was crazy and like a whirlwind and one of those things you just never imagine happening in your life. But then because of it, and I was by that point completely broke, I really didn't want to go back to the corporate world.
Yeah.
Like I just knew that I couldn't do it. If I went back to my job, I would have been working 60-hour weeks. I wouldn't be able to live at home with my mom.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to take her to hospital. I wouldn't be able to be there with her. And for me, that wasn't an option.
Like a non-negotiable.
It just wasn't an option.
And I totally get that.
I would have worked at like a, I don't know, anything. I would have done anything, to be honest. Like it just wasn't an option. So I sort of just hustled a lot harder. Like once things settled down a little bit, I sort of started thinking, okay, let's get back to this, like make a plan, work out how I can get some clients. And I just hustled really hard for a good few months. And I got a couple of like casual jobs to sort of pay my bills and things like that, and then built my business up on the side until I had enough clients to kind of then just solely do that.
Yeah.
Which was amazing. And I ended up coming back over to Bali, I think 6 months after I sort of started. And that was when I completely made the call to get rid of all the casual, like random stuff I was doing and just focus 100% on the business. Because I got over here and I came to Canggu and I realized how much work there is and how many other great like-minded people there are here as well. So it was a great place for me to be, and I just realized this is what I want. I don't want any ties to anything else. I just want to do my business. And yeah, so got some clients in Bali, got some clients in Australia, and also ended up with a couple, like one in the UK and one in Dubai, and now we're sorted.
Yeah, well, I think it's so inspirational that like you had that like awful news and this awful thing happen, but at the same time you were like, right, I'm gonna hustle and I'm gonna make a success of this. Like, so many people I think would find that so difficult to kind of get that fire at a time like that.
I mean, I just don't know how it would have happened. And I mean, it is okay. Like, my sister was still working corporate and she's still been able to help us so much and stuff, but for me it was just so important to be there all of the time, and I just didn't see it as an option really. So, and I don't know, in a way it was good because it means that this happened quicker, because I think had it not, I would have got home, I would have wanted more money, I would have kind of got another job and then lost sight of it a little bit. Whereas this way I put 100% into it from the beginning and just hustled until it worked. And it was
but I think
crazy.
I think it's an amazing, that piece as well is amazing, and I think there'll probably be listeners out there who might be having some shit things happen in their life as well, and you can always think, oh, I'll put off my dreams or whatever, but like, I think that your story is really inspirational from the fact that no, you don't have to. Like, sometimes in times like that it's more important.
It's the best time because, you know, it's, life is so short and tomorrow isn't promised to anyone. Like, none of us, even if you're young, like nobody is guaranteed to be here tomorrow. I think like, if you're going to do if there's something that you really want to do, you just need to give it a good go now. We just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I totally agree. Okay, so you mentioned that you got these clients, which I think is great. I think it would be really helpful to explain to the listeners how you kind of got your first few clients, because I think that's probably one of the most, well, worrying things for people if they're going to take a skill they learn in corporate and become like a consultant or in their own kind of agency. How do you get your first few clients?
So for me, it was, I basically looked at the skills that I had, and my whole career had been in travel, so I sort of stuck with travel. But I obviously needed to scale things down because the clients that I was going to be pitching to would not have anywhere near the same budget as the global retail brand that I'd come from. So I tried to think about what it was that small businesses needed, but I still tried to stay within that travel kind of sector. And I just kind of, to start with, I just literally like cold called people and pitched a lot. But if there was a brand that I really liked, I liked the look of, I could see that they had a lot of potential but needed a lot of help, I would put a proposal together and literally just show them what I could do for them. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd do mock-ups and, you know, everything, like actually show them, like, this is what I could do, this is how things could be better. So I did a lot of that. And then I also reached out to all the networks of people that I had from the travel industry, because there's a lot of them, and I had a series of jobs, so I kind of went out to everybody and just sort of said, if you hear of anything, or if, you know, a business you know needs help. I started off with very low rates, and I also took on 3 new clients for free every month, so that was kind of a thing that I did just to be able to build my portfolio up. Because I had the jobs on the side as well, so like money wasn't like a super crazy issue. It's just that I didn't have the portfolio yet to be able to be like, these are the people I've worked with, this is what I've done for them. So I started off working for free, and then also like with low intro rates and sort of on 3-month contracts, so then if it worked, great, then you put your rates up. Mm-hmm. And if it didn't, then, or if you didn't gel with the client or whatever, then it gives you only 3 months and then you can kind of move on to something else. But I think there was like a lot of trial and error, especially with rates and like what to charge and how long things take, because, you know, you think something's going to take you this long and then you get into it and things take you a lot longer. And so then next time you know what to charge and stuff like that. So there was definitely a lot of trial and error. And I came over to Changu and realized there was a lot of, there was a lot of travel brands, but there was also a lot of like lifestyle, fitness and e-com. So I sort of started pitching out to those brands, even though I had no experience in those industries. Mm-hmm. But in Changu especially, it's very word of mouth. So once you kind of landed one job, it was a bit of a flow-on effect. Yeah. In Australia, it's not like that. You literally need to just pitch and hope for the best. And it works. Like I would probably send out like 50 emails a week and maybe 3 would write back. Wow. And maybe you convert one if you're lucky.
Yeah.
So it's like it was a bit hard at the beginning, but I then came across all the Facebook groups and they're amazing. Yep. Like I just cannot believe the power of social media when it comes to this sort of thing. Like I've literally probably, I've made all my friends in Bali and I've met all my clients through Facebook groups, and it's just incredible. And it's not even in a weird way. Like a lot of people put up and say, I need help with this, or I need help with that. Or sometimes I put up and say, this is what I can do. I have a promo at the moment. Like, does anyone want to give it a go? And yeah. And
connecting.
And, yeah. Mm. Legit, like even I bought that daybed on Marketplace.
Yeah.
And the girl that was selling it to me was actually the marketing manager for like a really high-end fashion brand.
No way.
And she stalked me on Facebook after like we were talking about buying the couch. And then she was like, oh, I see that you're a digital marketer. We really need some help. And I was like, oh my God. And they're now like one of my biggest clients. Like,
amazing.
It's just insane.
Yeah.
You just have to be really open to it, I think.
Yeah, it's nice because I do see a lot of these posts, and it's particularly in like the social media realm and like paid ads and things. Oh, I need someone to help me with my paid ads. And then you'll see people tagging like different people in the comments, and the person who originally posted it is like, thank you so much. Like people really just really want the help, you know, it's just about connecting.
And it's also like a non-traditional way of finding help, because I think brands think, I need to hire someone full-time to help me with my marketing, but you don't. You just need to, whatever your budget is, really. Like you can outsource whatever you want to outsource, whatever money you have to play with. But I think that was a big thing for some of the bigger brands in like in Oz and even the UK that I've approached. They're not used to this outsourcing to freelancers, mm-hmm. but then once they give it a go, they realize it's actually a really cost-effective way to run their business, and they mm-hmm. can get people who specialize in certain areas but not spend nearly as much money as a full-time wage.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of educating brands and stuff as well, I think. But over here, there's not really a problem. It's what kind of everybody does. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it has been very word of mouth, but then a lot of Facebook groups, a lot of pitching and
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And just to add some context, so like what is the work that you are doing for clients? Is it all around like social media and paid ads?
So at the moment, I started off doing social media management, mostly organic kind of content creation, like running people's Instagram pages for them and mm-hmm. and those types of things. But then because my background is advertising and branding. So I also did, like I can build websites. So I've built some websites for clients. I've helped them with branding kits and things like that. I offer those kind of packages. But then over the time, I've actually found my niche is more in the digital space with the mm-hmm. ads, in particular with e-com. So I have taken a bit of a step away from travel and gone into e-com brands because especially those that use Shopify websites, mm-hmm. the e-com space is just so amazing and so very transparent and analytical, and I love it. So I think with the ads, they just work so well.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to then show the client the results because it's all very transparent. Like, this is how much we've spent. This is how much money I made you. And mm-hmm. it's very black and white. So then for me to pitch to other clients, very easy for me to get work because you can go, this is what I've done for all these brands. Here are the results. it's a little bit easier than like, oh, I manage this person's Instagram page. It looks really pretty.
Yes. But it's like, you know, ROI proof is
which harder. Is like, people need that too. And so it was fine. But for me, it didn't sit right because it was really hard to show the clients like what value they were getting. And for this, I really thrive in it because I think you can work really hard and then show them this is what I'm doing for you.
Yeah.
So I enjoy that space a lot more. So that's kind of where I am now. But then I also started my own e-com brand, Elaine Traders, because of that reason. I saw how easy the ads mm-hmm. work. And I mean, there's a lot of work involved to get the ads set up. But once you've kind of got your strategy in place, it's like it works really well. So mm-hmm. I'm doing that on the side as well.
Nice. And how did you go about like sourcing your products for the e-com store?
That took ages too, actually, because I didn't really know what to do. And I was pretty... certain I didn't want to work with any of the factories here because they are notoriously not very good. They don't treat their staff right. It's just like really bad conditions and stuff. So I didn't want any of that. I really just wanted the handmade pieces, which are all kind of made over in East Bali and other remote villages and stuff as well. But the ones that I got mine from are from East Bali in the villages where they actually make them. It took me a while. Like there's sort of middlemen type people, like, I don't know what they call them, like suppliers, I guess, but that speak good English. So then they can help you kind of communicate with the villagers and stuff. So I work with one, but I kind of went and met with a few of them to see what who I wanted to work with.
Yeah.
So that's working for now, but I would really like to work directly with the villagers, myself, like cut out that middleman, like actually go and find a village and know for sure that the money is going straight into them and things like that. So I'm working towards that for this year. But yeah, so far it's been good. It's been really fun. And I just felt a need to kind of give back to Bali after everything that Bali's done for me. I think it was important to kind of start a brand that was more about that. Like, it's more showcasing like these people that live here are just so talented, the things that they can make with their hands, it's insane. And I think it's probably, I want to educate people more on that, the culture, the traditions, and also just, you know, the general state of the place. It's not always what it seems. And there is another sort of side to Bali, and you do really need to kind of help some of the charities and things like that who are doing so good over there, here.
I think that's a really lovely way to put it, and I think that I totally get where you're coming from, and I think it's really nice that you've kind of gone off on that angle as well. And for the listeners, you've got so many of your pieces in this villa and they're just beautiful. I'll have to post some of them on my social media so you can have a look. But yeah, you're so right, they are so talented, and some of these pieces, they're just beautiful.
And I think as well as, like, there's a lot of expats in Bali, and there's a lot that are over here running their businesses or living here really, really quite cheaply compared to home. And I think for me, it's, like, important to give back in a way because, you know, that, I don't know, to me that's just how it's always been. Like, I think you should always give back. However your business is able to run, then I think there should be an element of that in everything that you do. So for me, it was also more about that. It's like, I don't want any of the kind of fast fashion, cheap stuff. I just want the things that are handmade, that's, you know, the artisans are getting work, and then you're also putting money into the villages. And I also give back to a local charity called the Bali Street Mums Project, and we sponsor a little girl called Kamang to go to school.
Yeah, this is amazing. Yeah. Let's talk about this.
She's my favorite. I love her. Like, it's so special to be able to do something like this. And I came across this charity actually at the Samadhi markets on Sundays. Yeah. They sell the little dolls there. But basically the Bali Street Mums Project is a charity here that helps mums who are begging on the streets get off the streets, and they sort of put them in like a safe home and teach them skills so they can make some money. So they either teach them how to make these dolls or how to make things out of old glass and stuff like that. So they sort of give them a skill, then they sell them at the markets, and the mums kind of start getting a wage, so they don't need to beg on the streets anymore. But obviously with the mums come the children, and a lot of the time the mums are single mums, which is a little bit frowned upon here, so it can be really hard for them. And the kids end up begging on the streets as well. So the other strand of the charity is getting the kids sponsored so they can go to school.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, when I reached out to her initially, I was going to donate a percentage of every sale just to the charity in general. And then she said that there was a little girl called Kamang who really needed sponsorship.
Mm.
And she sent me her picture and she told me that she was 8 years old. She'd never been to school. She'd been begging on the streets of Kuta and also selling little packets of tissues on the side of the road. And yeah, they kind of like took her into the safe house, but to be sponsored, which, and it's actually really cheap. Like I think it's $30 Australian a month or something. Like it's,
what?
Yeah, it's like nothing. And
oh my gosh.
And with that, basically she gets her uniform, all her supplies, she can go to school. It also pays for her food, and they do one activity with all the other little kids a week.
Yeah.
So they take them to the beach, or they take them, I don't know, on like different little activities to try and keep them in school and on track. But I actually met Kamang for the first time last time I was here, and it was the most special thing. Like I don't know, I cried, and it was amazing because she's so lovely, and they were saying she's just thriving because they were really worried because she's 8 and she's never been to school. But she's kind of catching up, and she's not missed a day. She's there an hour early every day.
Aww.
And she's thriving in the environment that, you know, they've been able to give her. And I gave her a little present. Like I took over some books and things like that for school and a little outfit. And I had put it in a little gift bag and I gave it to her, and she was super excited. You know, like little kids are anyway, but she kind of took it and like put it in her school bag, and I think she just didn't want all the other kids to kind of like take it and stuff. But then the charity lady messaged me that night and said, thank you for visiting, and Kamang is so happy. She loved her present. She'd never ever received a present in her life.
Oh, that literally makes me want to cry.
Yeah, I cried when she told me. Oh. So I was like, this poor little thing. Like, and it was just literally like a pencil case with some pencils and like a little outfit. And she said she's just like holding on to it, and she just loves it so much. She's never had a present. And
that's so
and
lovely.
I said, well, what about from her mum for her birthday and stuff? And she said, no, they don't have money for any of that. So I don't know. Like, it feels really good to be able to like help this family, and I think to give her a little bit of a chance at life. And
yeah,
and for all the expats that live here, I think that's the side of Bali that people don't see. Like, we see the beach clubs and the nice restaurants and the life that we get to live here really cheaply, but actually like just half an hour away in Denpasar is where, you know, they're living. There's people that are living in the Denpasar dump with nothing, and it's just, there's another world to it. I think it's really important for people to see that and to kind of be able to give back in some way.
Yeah, and I think I think that's absolutely incredible that you've done that, and I think you're like having that direct impact on someone else's life. I just think must be so fulfilling as well.
Yeah, it has definitely changed the way I see business for sure.
Yeah, and I think I chat about this with like some of my clients as well, who they often complain about their corporate jobs not being able to see like the impact that they're having, the ending impact. And they're like, oh, I want to just start a charity or start a social impact company. But actually, to make an impact, you don't have to create a company around the problem necessarily. As long as you build a business and you're creating that wealth, you can give back through a different channel as well. And you've got the freedom to do so when you own your own business.
Yeah, for sure. It's so important, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so the last kind of section, I want to just chat a little bit about your kind of life here in Bali and what it's like, I guess, kind of working remotely, working online, like living in paradise. Like, how does it kind of compare to your old corporate life?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously it's amazing. Like, you can't even really compare it to the corporate world at all. But I think for me, the biggest thing that I love the most is the flexibility. And especially now with my mum being sick, for me, that's like that's the best gift that I could really have. And for me at the moment, I go between Australia and here, and that is a really great balance for me. And I just feel really happy that I even get to have that.
Mm-hmm.
But when I am in Bali, I'm very happy, and it's literally it's the best place to be and to work. And I guess, flexibility definitely. And then I don't know. I think it's just being able to choose your work hours and days. And if one day I had a really bad day yesterday and I just decided I'm not going to do that today, and, you know, and then you work harder the next day. And some days, like when I'm in Australia, I work really hard and I hustle and I might work like 20 days straight sometimes. But then when I come to Bali, if I want, I can have half days or I can have a 3-day weekend or, you know, I just really love that flexibility. And also being able to work from anywhere, because I'm a big traveler and I've been to over 60 countries. So for me, that whole like 4 weeks annual leave thing was just a crock of shit.
Yeah.
And I just never really, I never really understood it.
I love that expression.
Like, I just, it never made sense to me. Like if anything, travel makes things, you come back feeling so much better.
It,
so for me, traveling is important. And I love that I can, like the last year, my sister got married in Spain. So I worked all through Europe for a month. And then I can also, my big sister's in Dubai, so it means I can go over there, I can hang out with her, and it just, I've been able to see my big sister more in the last 12 months than I have in 10 years, and I think that's, like, also a gift, really.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know, the flexibility definitely is probably the best thing, but when I'm here, I usually just work from cafes or sometimes the beach clubs or sometimes the villa. I love that, like, that's... I thrive in those environments. Not everybody does, but I haven't really done the co-working hubs that much, mostly because when I first started coming, they were a bit expensive.
Yeah.
But then looking back at it, I think maybe that they're really amazing because you meet lots of people, and I think if anything, that's what you need as well. You need friends when you first get somewhere like this. So I definitely do recommend people kind of tap into those. Because for me, it took a while like to actually meet people and make friends and be able to have people to do stuff with. So, but yeah, no, I mean, generally it's just such a great life to be able to live. And I'm definitely very grateful for being able to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. And there's just something amazing about being surrounded by like-minded people that think in the same way.
I mean,
and they're
I feel
that
like it makes you a lot more productive just being around these great people. And everyone in Canggu is very open to collaborating. They're open to skill sharing. Like it's very different in Australia. People are very closed off. People don't want to, I don't know, it's just different.
Yeah.
And here it's like, and also people here are very open to just meeting new people. And I've had so many people just reach out on Instagram and be like, do you want to go for sunset?
Or
do you
want to
and it is not weird at all.
Yeah.
But in Australia, that would be weird. And you'd be like, I'm blocking you and I don't want to see you again.
Yeah.
It's very normal. I think I love that about this place, that you're just surrounded by the most amazing people.
And yeah.
I mean, it can also be really hard. Like I'm the same as like a lot of freelancers, like you're working on your own and you don't have people to bounce ideas off, and you literally do the entire process yourself, like the, you know, every single part of the business is on you, and if you want to have time off, you have no one to hand that stuff over to. So I mean, I do definitely see the challenges, and I think in Australia I do miss being around people, but I don't ever feel like that here, because I think even though you're working for yourself on your own things, there's always people next to you.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's great. Like, it's the best environment to be, really.
Yeah, and I've said this to people as well, that relationships are quite intense here. Like, not necessarily, like, partner stuff, but, like, friends as well, because, really, it almost feels like your colleagues and family, because we're all living together. So in a way, like, it can just be so nice as well to, if you've had like something tough happen in the business, you can then go and speak to your friend and they're probably experiencing the same thing. And
exactly,
so
nice. Everyone understands it to an extent, even if you work in different things, like you might not understand the actual work that they do, but it's the same kind of concept. Like you have the same challenges. And yeah, I think, and then to be honest, even the social media pages, because I think if there are issues or you have questions or something's not working, you can post things up on the Facebook groups. And then there's this whole community of amazing people that just want to help. And so it's definitely, it's a lot easier than I think people think.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But I do think it depends where you want to be and where you base. Because in Australia, I would find doing this full time quite challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Just a bit lonely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could do it, but it would be lonely. Whereas I think in places that are set up for it, then, and there's a lot of those in the world. Like, it's obviously not just Bali, but I think for me, Bali is the place I need to be for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it too.
Yes.
Okay, so we're coming up to time. And just to finish off, I do a little quick fire round. But it's all good. So it's just three little questions that we'll close out with. So number one, what's your favorite place that you've ever traveled to?
Oh, this is such a hard question. I feel like there's so many places that I love, but I think Cuba is one. It's just one of those places that everyone needs to go to. Mexico is another one, and I spent 2.5 months there, so not even just the beaches, just the whole country in general. Mm-hmm. It's just something about Mexico that I really do love. And Bali is which is very cliche because I know that we're living here and stuff like that, but Bali has always been that place for me, and it's actually really close to Australia, so it's not even very exotic. But for me, every time I came to Bali, there was something about this place. I knew that it was magic, and I knew that I would end up here one day, and every time I came and left, I knew I'd be back.
Yeah.
It's got that pull to
it. I feel that too.
It's definitely got a pull to it, and I really do feel like it's magic. And that might sound really strange, but there's just good things happen here.
Yes.
It's weird.
I agree with you. There's a feeling in the air. Opportunity has just happened. You can trust the process.
Yeah,
you know?
It's magic.
It clicks, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Something clicks. Okay, so second question. So the name of this podcast is the Well and Wild Podcast. And I called it that because I think that to be well in life, you have to do some wild things.
Okay.
So what's the wildest thing that you've ever done?
Oh my gosh. I have done some pretty wild things, but not recently. All of my wild days probably would have been in my 20s.
That's fine.
I don't know. This is hard to be put on the spot.
I know.
I don't know. I mean, a lot of my travels have been quite wild. I think, especially when you're younger, there's things that you would do that you look back and go, oh my God, I can't believe you did that. And there's situations that I've been in the world where I've nearly died, or put myself in situations where, you know, I nearly died on a boat trip in Guatemala.
Oh my God.
And I've nearly died several times.
What do you
times,
mean actually. What
happened? Well, it was just, we took a boat out when it was clearly not the best weather. Yeah. And then we kind of got stuck out there. It was the biggest storm, and they were calling Mayday, Mayday. You need to kind of, we had to get under the boat and just hope that someone would come and save us, which they did luckily, but it was very scary. And I actually ended up meeting some of the best friends that I've ever had on that trip.
Wow, a way to get close.
Just naughty things, you know, go skinny dipping and just silly stuff, and get drunk and wake up and not know where you are, and I don't know, lots of crazy things from my travels. The best stories have come out of some of the things that I've done, but I definitely don't regret any of it.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, and then the final one is, what is the best piece of advice that you've ever received, or the life mantra that you live by?
So for me, it was actually from my work mum. When I worked at my corporate job, I had this older lady who I call my work mum. She was just full of the best advice, and I don't know, I loved her so much. And she basically said to me all the time there, because I would kind of get myself into these really stressed situations, and she'd say to me, Amy, you just have to be like the waves. You have to go with the flow, because at the end of the day, that's all you can do. What you can control, you can control, and everything else you need to let go. And the whole go with the waves thing has really stuck with me, especially when mum was diagnosed. I think it's so hard to be in your head and try to, I don't know, you just can't be like that all the time. You really just need to kind of go with it, and what will be, and every time something gets thrown at you, you just have to make a plan and go.
Yeah.
But even on bad days, it's the same. I just go down to the beach and I literally sit there, and you just have to remind yourself to be like the waves.
Yeah. Love that. That's such a good piece of advice. Okay, and final thing, where can the listeners find you? Perhaps they need help with their social media.
Oh, yes. Okay, great.
Where can they find you?
So my website is www.elainecollective.com, but you can also find me on Instagram. That's probably going to be where you can sort of see all the different people I've worked with and the work that I can do. And if you also want to have a look at the bags that I'm selling through Elaine Traders, then that's elainetraders.com.
Nice. And I'll link all of those in the show notes so that you can just go and click on them. But thank you so much, Amy. That's amazing. So inspirational as well.
It was really fun. Thanks for having me.
That's okay. I hope you enjoyed that amazing episode. Amy's story is so inspirational and she's just such a lovely, genuine person. So I've put all the links in the show notes. I would be very grateful if you could send this episode on to one friend if you found it really, really useful. I know loads of people can benefit from Amy's story and I would just love to get it out there to as many people as possible. But thank you so much for listening and have an amazing week.